ADS-B and NextGen? How soon and what will it look like? I'm Paul Plack, and this is Aero News. Welcome into the Aero News special feature. Thanks for downloading us today. My guest is Bob Poole of the Reason Foundation. And Bob, I want to thank you for taking some time out. You get direct firsthand experience with the airline travel industry on which you sometimes report.
I do indeed. I'm traveling about 3 trips a month on average, and all types and sizes of airports in the U.S. and 3 times this year to Europe, too. So,
one of your 2 newsletters is called ATC Reform News. And in the November 2009 edition, you had a story headlined Incentives for Next-Gen Equipage. I got to tell you that NextGen and ADS-B in particular kind of went off the rails, in the opinion of many in the GA community, when it went from being a system that involved mutual benefits, which would have incentivized GA pilots to equip their aircraft for ADS-B, to being a strictly ADS-B out deal that didn't really offer any benefits and may come with considerable expense.
Yes. Yeah, this is a real problem, and it's the same problem in principle exists for airlines. You know, airlines are not, most of the airlines are not making money these days and haven't made much money in the last decade. And so they have the same kind of concern about being required to buy a lot of expensive gear, put on their planes without knowing when the FAA would get around to having systems that can interface with it and potentially give them better service, or whether even some of those things will ever be implemented. The airlines remember microwave landing systems about 20 years ago, MLS, which was supposed to be the thing that was going to replace ILS. Well, they ended up canceling the program, but a lot of airlines had already bought equipment to use with it. So that left a very, very bad taste, and there's long memories in the airline business over that.
Well, now, in the case of ADS-B in particular, which seems to be kind of the first corner pulled up on the edge of NextGen, ADS-B is already up and functioning in Alaska and I think in Florida, if I'm not mistaken.
In South Florida, that's right. Soon in the Gulf of Mexico by early next year.
Okay. All right. Is it not possible, I mean, if the FAA is committed to this technology, to roll it out ahead of time, have it ready?
Well, the FAA will have all the ground equipment up and running nationwide under the contract they have with, I believe it's ITT, by, I think, 2014.
Mm-hmm.
And yet the deadline, the mandate for equipage for ADS-B out is 2020. So, if we could figure out a way to make it worth people's while to equip their planes for, particularly for ADS-B in, which gives real benefits of traffic and weather information, we could have a lot of benefits fairly soon. Yeah.
Is this just an issue, Bob, of not seeing bang for buck, especially on parts of on the part of the airlines, or is it the fact that they already have at least 2 systems that would appear to make some of this redundant?
Yeah, well, the airlines, they do have, they all have, planes have flight management system computers. They have inertial navigation systems, most of them. So in terms of accurate flight tracks, many, you know, a lot of them are equipping for the additional tweaks to those systems that allow RNP, required navigation performance, to fly very, very precise tracks that can save them time and fuel costs on landings and takeoffs in particular. So there is that question, too. On the other hand, ADS-B, one of the real cost savings for air traffic control is supposed to be, once ADS-B is fully fully installed and all the planes are equipped, a removal of ground-based secondary surveillance radars, for example, which are expensive to replace and expensive to maintain, and potentially other ground-based nav aids as well. So there is a future benefit that, but it depends on essentially 100% equipage for at least all the airspace that where there's currently positive control and you know, other than strictly visual flight rules.
Well, after the break, let's talk about something that you mentioned in your newsletter that I have not seen mentioned anywhere else before, and that's something called Best Equipped, Best Served. My guest is Bob Poole of the Reason Foundation. We'll be back in a moment. I'm Paul Plack, and you're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
Uncramp your style in a new Citation CJ2 Plus from Cessna. Now with integrated ProLine 21 avionics, FADEC, and a restyled cockpit and cabin. In the CJ2 Plus, you'll carry more payload than you could in the original CJ2. You'll climb and cruise faster. You'll have the freedom to use even shorter runways, and you'll do it all on less fuel. For a sure thing, Call 1-800-4-CESSNA.
Diamond's DA-42 Twin Star is General Aviation's ultimate flying machine. Fly fast with the confidence of a twin for the cost of a single. Go direct over water or rugged terrain and cover great distances in the first and only piston aircraft with an advanced airframe, avionics, and engines. The DA-42 gives you options you've never had before, including the Garmin G1000 and known ice protection. Go where you want, when you want, fast and for less. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3220.
Welcome back to the Aero News Special Feature. Paul Plack here with Bob Poole of the Reason Foundation, talking about equipage for next gen and incentives to make not only GA pilots, but the airlines think it's a good idea to get this stuff installed. And Bob, one of the things you write in your newsletter is, and I'll quote here, "What I find most promising, however, is not financial incentives, but performance incentives. In FAA and RTCA terms, these go by the name best equipped, best served, or BEBS. In other words, instead of sticking with this historic approach of first come, first served, the air traffic organization would give priority in landings, takeoffs, altitude changes, etc., to aircraft that can best take advantage of next gen. The first thing that kind of raises the hairs on my neck when I see this is the idea that the fallible humans who are sometimes subject to emotion within the air traffic control system, and I mean, they do a great job, but they're human, maybe having a bad day and are being kind of given license to say, you're the good kid, you get to come first, you're the bad kid, you need to wait.
That's interesting. That, Paul, I had not heard that concern expressed before, and that's something that we will have to think about. On the other hand, I mean, I've heard anecdotally, and I don't want to offend any individual controllers that may listen to this, but some of that goes on today in certain cases. Controllers, have to make split-second decisions about, who goes where and so forth, it's been told to me by airline pilots and others that some of those decisions appear to them to be somewhat arbitrary.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I think that potential is going to be there regardless. On the other hand, though, I mean, next gen presumes a lot of process automation that should, under normal conditions, reduce the amount of controller discretion. The concept behind next gen is that one of the key concepts is that controllers with more process automation built in, which is a key to squeezing more capacity out of the existing volume of physical space in the sky, the controller's role will change more to being one of a problem solver and a conflict manager than one of directly authorizing each particular little tweak or change in a flight. You'll file flight plans. The system will communicate through digital communications, sending messages back and forth and approvals. And a lot of things presumably will be done routinely with the controller watching and making sure that the conflict probes don't identify any impending conflicts. But there'll be less direct turn-by-turn, level-by-level yes-no from the controller, him or herself.
Okay. Now, I have to notice that NATCA, the National Air Traffic Controllers Association, has been uncharacteristically quiet and reserved of late, as opposed to what I guess we could look back on as the golden age of hyperbole over the immediately preceding 2 years. And I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that they've got some prospects for getting what they want.
They've got a new contract that wasn't everything in the world they could have asked for, but it's a lot better than the circumstances they had before. They also have a former pilots union member now as the head of FAA, Randy Babbitt. They have a very labor-friendly administration overall, and the FAA has implemented a new kind of corporate culture within the air traffic organization that emulates what the European air traffic providers have been doing. In Europe, it's called just culture, meaning justice. Controllers are now being encouraged to report mistakes that they make in a non-punitive environment, where the idea is that we need all the information that we can get about things that go wrong so we can learn from it and figure out how to prevent things like that from happening in the future. And as that culture seems to be getting institutionalized, it's quite new. Those things all together, I think, are producing a much better climate.
Okay. Regardless of that, though, NATCA has made it subtle but clear, let me put it that way, that all this automation and the prospect of eventually reducing the number of air traffic controllers employed is an issue that kind of sticks in their craw.
Oh, very much so. I mean, and this is true of almost any industry where you have major technology change that leads to higher productivity. Every airspace user in America, absolutely, it's critical to have higher productivity because with rising levels of air traffic and a fixed volume of airspace, we've got to figure out ways to make that more productive so that we can get more real use out of it. I think the good news is all the projections that I've seen, and I say this completely straightforward and honestly, show that at projected levels of air traffic growth and the kinds of productivity gains we're looking at from NextGen, I don't see any reduction in absolute numbers of controllers at all, being at all likely. If we can, over 20 years, double the productivity of air traffic movements per controller hour, while we're doubling the capacity of the airspace to handle a doubled level of flight operation, that means today's number, approximately 15,000 controllers, will be handling double the traffic. And I think that's the most likely outcome of all of this, assuming all goes well.
Okay, so you feel there's sufficient incentive for individual controllers not to see best equipped, best served as an opportunity to throw a stick in the spokes?
Yes, I don't see that as a serious likely problem. And I also think if I were running the air traffic organization, I would feel perfectly comfortable about making an ironclad no layoff guarantee that over the next 20 years we would not reduce the controller workforce below the current approximately 15,000 level, and that we would expect all the productivity gains to simply lead to more capacity with the same number of people.
Okay. Well, Bob, that sounds almost unlike you.
I'm really thinking hard about how to make implementing NextGen successfully a win-win proposition for everybody involved. And I think the only way we're going to get there in a timely fashion is if we can figure out a way to make it be genuinely that.
Bob, we always appreciate the chance to talk to you, and thanks for taking some time out for our listeners today.
Thanks very much, Paul. Delighted to be here.
Bob Poole is the founder and director of transportation studies for the Reason Foundation. His two monthly newsletters on ATC reform and airport policy and security can both be found at www.reason.org, where you will also find direct contact info for Bob. You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.